7 of the Eternal Beta Podcast, November 10. That's right, it's the Xbox Series X launch day, and we're all about that here on the Eternal Beta Podcast. 2 days out from the PlayStation 5 launch. None of that matters to us, though, because we're mostly PC gamers anyway. So, as is, joining me this week is TV Dave.
Launch day! Launch day!
Ooh, launch day party. Mm-hmm. And the Mike Star.
I'm offended you didn't use my intro name this week.
Oh, sorry. Dryzen Mike?
Yes, the supply lines for Ryzen have dried up, hence Dryzen Mike.
Right, okay.
I don't have a 5900X yet.
Let's give that man a round of applause for that one, shall we?
That's a very layered entendre. And also joining us is Captain George again.
So for Xbox Series X, can we call it XX for short?
Yeah.
Yeah, you nice. Can. Nice.
I mean, we all can.
I will.
Are we just going to go straight to Xbox? Is it just going to be easier?
I did. I couldn't hold that one back.
Yeah, the Xbox. Well, so people have been receiving their Xboxes in the mail. And Australians are even getting some early last week, on the weekend.
Are you saying they came early?
They came early. The Xboxes came early. And we've all been having a good time down here, so good luck to you guys and the rest of the world. No, that's great. I mean, like they said, you can fire it up and just expect lots of updates in the meantime. Yeah, really, and we're going to talk about this, I suppose, with both launches. Not a lot to do with your new Xbox Series X or Series S, as it might be. Very thin on the launch lineup.
Yeah. Well, that's the point, right? What exactly are you playing on day one of launch?
Or day minus seven, as it were.
Well, if you've got PlayStation, you can play that little tech demo platformer so you can find out how awesome your haptic feedback stuff in your DualSense 5.
Do people still watch Blu-rays? Do these things play Blu-rays?
They do, and I'm waiting for the Blu-ray player review from Vincent Teo at HD DV Test. Hopefully he does one, because I would very much like to see the comparison between the two consoles as a Blu-ray player. See, this is something that's actually important to me. Like, if I'm going to have a console connected to my whole AV setup, like, it better do all of the things that I want it to do, so I'm, like, playing a game and then, okay, let's watch Netflix now, or let's throw a movie in, or, you know, whatever app you want to stream with, and just be able to do all of those things and actually play the file formats properly and so on and so on and so on. So if it isn't the like media hub that it's supposed to be, then I don't want it. So the thing about the Xbox is, though, I feel like it's just the old Xbox, but just faster and slightly bigger. Like a same interface, right?
Well, same controller compatibility, right?
Controller compatibility. Things work. It just looks like the same Xbox.
But for Microsoft, that's their strategy, right? It's their strategy is, you know, you buy your game from them and you play it from whichever device you've acquired from them or that is compatible with them. That's really their strategy, right?
Yeah, I think it just really is a bit boring in that sense. Like, it's not really much. It's like putting a new graphics card in your computer. It's like your games are still there. Your peripherals are still there. It's got the same screen when you load it up. It just goes a bit faster and gooder.
But that's true. Also a big selling point for them as well, because you can just keep doing what you're doing, but you can do it better. And you don't have to worry about, oh, does this peripheral now work on this console? You know, you can buy this new Xbox and bam, everything will plug in and it'll go.
So first-party games that are with Series X updates for the Series X, Forza Horizon 4, Gears 5, Gears Tactics, Grounded, and Ori Will of the Wisps. So that's a whole bunch of games that were already out. Grounded, I suppose, is an early access thing.
And look, the ones that were Xbox Play Anywhere, you could play on PC in 4K. Since launch, pretty much.
You could, yeah. So none of this is especially news to us. You also had third-party exclusive console launch games like...
Which have been updated now, yeah.
Yeah, Bright Memory, with Dead by Daylight's there, Tetris Effects, The Tourist, The Falconeer, Yakuza Like a Dragon, a couple other ones, but like, you know, nothing
literally substantial. No new games.
Yeah, and then
I mean Microsoft Flight Sim isn't even over right. on it, right?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
No, that's still months away apparently. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, look, I can barely run it on my computer as is, so
But that said, even though there are none of these exclusives that are normally needed to be there on launch to ship hardware, haven't these things been selling out anyway?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I mean, look,
perhaps I was going to say, perhaps you know the demand was you know anticipated, and that allowed them to push back these exclusives. They didn't need to do it anymore. They're like, we're going to sell these things anyway. What's the point in trying to rush something for launch?
Mm. There are the third-party console games on both platforms, which is Assassin's Creed Valhalla today. Mm-hmm. There's Black Ops Cold War, Cyberpunk, which has been delayed, and Just Dance 2021.
But they're not next-gen exclusives, right? They're
cross-platform.
Yeah.
But they are new big titles, so you know you could understand someone wanting to get the new Assassin's Creed and going and getting their Xbox and throwing it in. Like that's a big thing. The Cold War, I'm not sure, we hit the release date for Cold War? Is that being launched?
It's tomorrow,
sure.
The 11th or the 12th.
Yes, yeah, so it's probably out by the time you're hearing this. And then, you know, it's not like, I mean, this is the weak point for Xbox, but you do have this whole like library of games there, right? You've got the Games Pass. So you've got hundreds of games.
Games Pass plus backwards compatibility.
Plus EA Play in the Games Pass as well now and all that kind of jazz. So, you know, that's the proposition they're presenting. Nothing really too different, just an upgrade, right? Mm-hmm. With the promise of things to come. Then on the other side...
And your games will load faster.
Your games will load faster. Well, and equally, they will load faster on your PlayStation 5.
No, it's not equally. I think they're faster on the PlayStation 5.
Even faster.
Even faster. Even faster.
Yeah. I did see the joke that the PlayStation 5 loading times are faster than the Xbox. So you can load the new Spider-Man game or your new game on the PlayStation 5 in 15 seconds. But the new Xbox game will take months to load because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a good one.
It was a good one. Full credit for stealing it to whoever made it. But yeah, that was funny. Because Infinite's like 6 months away, right? So... Yeah, anyway, PlayStation 5, it does load faster on the PlayStation 5 than it does on the Xbox, but I think the Xbox can switch games better than the PlayStation 5 can.
Yeah, that's right. There's no quick resume functionality on PS5. There's a little launcher bar, and you can change to back to your other game, but it reloads that game, like it fires it up again, whereas Xbox specifically has quick resume, which is caching the games onto a part of the drive and then pulling them back really quickly in a matter of like seconds to be like playing the game again, as opposed to having to go through the menus and everything.
I wonder if it was at all possible to do multiple caches of the same game.
Like saving the game?
No. Four versions of Fortnite at once. So you got four instances running at once. You die in the first one, and then your next one comes in, you die in that one, you can just drop another person in. You just quick resume from one talk to the other. Rig the game in your favor.
I don't know if they're going to get that far with the of accessibility options, but that could be something.
So you're saying a game like Fortnite, but with lives?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
This is a really tough choice for the ADHD generation then, isn't it, right? What do you want? Do you want games now, or do you want to be able to change games now?
I want to play Just Dance 2021 and dance along to Doja Cat, to be honest. That's what I want to do.
It's important that when you want to dance that you can dance quickly.
Correct. Exactly. I don't want to be sitting around waiting for it to load. I just want to say so, and Doja Cat's there.
Well, if your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of yours, right?
Absolutely. anyway.
So we have plenty on the PS5 side in terms of new games, though, which is the Astro's Playroom built-in little tech demo, which everyone seems to be raving about because it's one of the only things they were allowed to for most of this week talk about. It was smart, quite smart of Sony to leave the marketing to the final week before launch. Do you think? Like, all of the news right before the launch was all of the amazing things the PlayStation can do. Whereas Xbox has been, what, a month now of pushing tiered releases of their messaging out?
Yeah, the Xbox messaging has been weird from per strategy. It hasn't. Yeah,
it's been weird. But what are they going to do? They announced the specs months ago. They announced you're going to be able to quick resume months ago.
Yeah, and they got no new games. UI. What are they going to do?
The UI looks the same. There's no new games. Like, what are they actually going to give us?
Very, very good point. They got nothing really. Yeah.
I guess they're trying to sell it on its merits and on the promise of, you know, hopes and prayers or something. So.
Yeah. Last episode we hadn't seen a lot of the PlayStation news, so it's literally all been compacted into the previous week that we found out about all of these things. So what you end up with is Astro's Playroom, Demon's Souls, the remaster, which looks pretty sweet.
Not technically a new game.
No,
but yes,
not a new game. A remaster of the original Spider-Man from last generation, but a PS5 version of it. Then the Miles Morales, which is truly the only kind of new game on PS5 at launch.
It's only on PS5 as well, right?
Only on PS5.
not on PC at all.
Yeah, the thing is with that is it's only like 8 hours long. It's like a large DLC length of a game.
So, and it's already being panned, right?
It's getting some decent reviews I've read. Have you seen some panning, have you?
A couple, yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be that happy about a, you know, something I'd be finished in a week with as a launch game. That'd
can
piss
you,
me off a bit,
you,
I think.
Actually, like, think about, let's think about this. Let's go back to 10 years ago. Let's go back to... Actually, go to the mid-2000s where you had the Wii launch or the PlayStation 2 launch the Xbox original. Can you imagine a console launching with one new game?
Yeah, like you wanted a choice of 10, right?
Yeah, people were outraged when the PlayStation 3 launched and they had like 20 games on launch. Like, what am I going to play? Well, GTA 5 probably or whatever it was. So
yeah, yeah, like your PS2 launched list was about 20 games long.
Yeah,
I mean we do have a different, you know, reality with games libraries, you know, digital delivery and all of that, so things are a little bit different, you know. The libraries are there, but yeah, nothing new is it's something strange, but yeah, if things are different now, I guess.
You might also pick up Sackboy, A Big Adventure. Then there's third-party Bugsnax, Godfall, and The Pathless on PlayStation 5. So there's not like nothing.
Godfall
but...
looks... Yeah, it's PlayStation console exclusive, but Godfall's also PC. So, yeah.
So, look, a really, really weak launch lineup, which sucks, which is kind of good in a way, right? Because if you did want one... You weren't going to get one today anyway unless you already pre-ordered it 2 months ago or more.
You're highly unlikely.
Very little chance. Very small chance.
There are a few floating around that you'll be able to pick up only in stores. But you're up against it.
Indeed. So, yeah, I've put the need to pick up a updated console onto the back burner personally. No rush for me.
Taken off the stove entirely for me. Well, never was on the stove in the first place.
I probably wasn't going to pick up a Series X just because my Xbox One X has... I don't know. I've got an Xbox One, not a One X. What am I saying? It hasn't had power coursing through its circuits for like a year. And I would... consider getting a PlayStation 5 for Gran Turismo 7, which is MIA.
So I forgot to mention, there's a few other things there. There's Watch Dogs Legion.
Oh, yeah.
There's NBA 2K21. There's Dirt 5. There's Destiny 2 Beyond Light, which is today, and Borderlands 3, which was already out, but an update. Yeah. So a couple other things in there. But like, you know, really, this is what you've got. If you're an Assassin's Creed, if you're a Ubisoft fan, there you go. It's your day. If you're a Destiny fan, it's your day. But
you're already playing.
You know, everyone else.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You're already playing it.
Mm. You're just playing it in 60 frames a second now on console, which would be nice. 4K 60 would be nice. You guys got any other takes on the consoles?
Well, I mean, I was just going to say a new console is definitely off the table for me. I mean, I've realized I can just emulate Commodore 64 games, so I'm not going to buy a Commodore 64 Mini.
You may want to pick up an AO Neo, though. Right, Mike?
Ooh, yeah. AO Neo, you say?
Yeah, so the AO Neo has beaten both PlayStation and Xbox onto the market. And it's good news for everyone. The AO Neo Founder Edition has launched, which has a Zen 2 processor, the 4500U, 6 threads, 6 cores, operating at a blistering 4 gigahertz, with an AMD Radeon Vega 6 graphics chip in there with 1.5 gigahertz, 16 gig of RAM, a 1280 by 800 IPS screen. Apparently, battery is, you know, okay, and only weighs 650 grams, and you can pick that up for about the same price as
1280 by 800. Isn't that 16 by 10? That should be 16 by 10, not 16 by 9, right? Because that's 16 by 9, 720p. 1280 by 720. So that's 800 right. is 16 by 10. Revolutionary.
Yeah.
I think that will change everything.
It's a selling point for sure.
Give you that, you know.
Yeah, not only that. Latest titles such as Horizon Zero Dawn, it's maintaining above 30 FPS on average at that resolution. Mm. 32 specifically is what is mentioned.
Higher is higher.
So, yeah, good news for the console market everywhere, and a surprise, a dark horse you could call it, here to take away the market share from the two traditional players. Who needs a duopoly? We've got a triopoly.
If we just can compare battery specs for a minute between the Xbox Series X, PlayStation 5, and the AO Neo.
Yep.
47 watt-hours for the AO Neo and no battery for either of the other two. So, clear winner.
That's
exactly. If you wanted a battery life on your Xbox Series X or PlayStation 5, you'd have to spend hundreds of dollars on an uninterruptible power solution and a really long extension cable.
That's unique first-party solution to the problem there.
Yeah, the only downside I'd say with this release from Aya is they're fairly restricted in terms of where you can buy it at the moment.
Yeah, it is exclusive to the Chinese market at the moment. However, they are looking at doing like a Kickstarter-y type thing for international customers. So, look, I don't think necessarily this is out of you know, themselves just forcing it on the Chinese market. I think the demand is just that high in China that they're just unable to make enough. This is, it's what you call the classic NVIDIA approach. The demand is too
high. It's just the demand was too much. The plenty of supply.
Correct.
Yeah. No issues with supply.
I actually do want to mention a few things I found out about the PlayStation 5 this week, though, and that is that one that jumped out at me is that they don't support 1440p output on the console. So
what does that mean? You know,
so basically you can only connect via 1080p, which will upscale to 1440 and if you plug it into a monitor, or 4K. So for a lot of people with like high res, you know, or 2K as they call it, 2560 1440p or larger PC monitors who wanted to, you know, throw a PlayStation on their desk or they're in their office or whatever to play away, there's a weird spot there where if you don't have a 4K 60 monitor, you're in trouble. Now, the other thing that surprised me as well is that there is a substantial lack of 120 frames per second titles just anywhere across both consoles. Dirt 5, we talked about. George, you've been playing that.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of that, there's, you know, even Miles Morales' performance mode on PlayStation is 4K 60. So it's non-ray tracing. And then the quality mode is like 4K 30 with ray tracing. So not a like huge jump anyway for the games that are coming out to get any of these features. Lucky though, because HDMI 2.1, as we talked about recently, is a bit of a mess. It's showing some teething problems with different components in chains. And I was watching Stop the FOMO's channel on YouTube yesterday, where he outlined that trying to use HDMI 2.1 on these new consoles with 4K, HDR, like VRR, and so there's no VRR on PS5, variable refresh rate at all. And, you know, get all these things working. Some of them would even not work if you were just using them. Like HDR would be choppy, or like you couldn't get all of this working through HDMI 2.1 as it is. Now, maybe software will help that out in future. But yeah, that's not a promising start.
See, so, I thought the point of a console was that you just plug it in and it works. So you didn't have to worry about all this tech stuff.
You do, but you just don't get all of the potential feature that it might have. You'll plug it in and it'll do 4K at 30 or 60 or whatever it happens to be. But I will add as a side note, there are no problems on the Aya Neo console in terms of HDMI connections.
Yes, we're gonna see a lot of
no stress,
a lot of reaction over the next couple of weeks as people start actually getting their consoles, and I think we're gonna go back to clamoring for games pretty quickly. Do you think?
Yeah, it's dry. Yeah. Well, I guess it comes to the question then, Steve. Let's go around the room then. Let's in the hypothetical situation. You're cashed up. Perhaps you've got a recent stimulus package of some description. You know, an inheritance, government handout, whatever it happens to be. George, you were sitting there. You're in the market. GT, you know, whatever it happens to be. Right now on launch, do you buy the Xbox Series X or do you buy the PlayStation 5? Or do you go one of the Series S, perhaps, to throw a real spanner into the works, save your money and pre-order Cyberpunk 2077 instead?
I'm a bit disappointed you didn't include the Neo.
Look, I only because of the there's a demand problem for it.
Good point. You can't get it outside of China just yet.
So we've got to be realistic in our hypotheticals.
It's definitely the PlayStation 5 for me, and it is because the PlayStation 5 will be the only way I get to experience Gran Turismo 7. So even though Gran Turismo 7 isn't coming out until the first half of next year, according to the latest leak, you know, if I had to choose, that's what I'd choose now in anticipation for that arriving. So again, the importance of that exclusive title to drive that sale, that'll do it for me.
It's still sooner than Forza Horizon 5, so... Yeah.
Well, we don't know that either. We just don't know.
But you wouldn't be able to do Flight Sim on your PlayStation 5. Have you considered that?
Yeah, I'm...
Yes, you have, because you have a PC anyway. Now, Dave, in the world of Dave, where $30.90 is an awful lot to spend on a GPU, let's say you had the $700-something dollars that it costs to get an Xbox Series S or X or PlayStation 5, does Demon's Souls lure you in?
No. I would buy all of the retro consoles and then do a streaming if to try and beat them all.
Oh, nice.
That's yeah. Really good.
With only 7,412 titles to play.
I'd be running out of time, right. Yeah.
And Microsoft representative, aka Game Pass Steve, why would you select the PlayStation 5?
I would select the PlayStation 5 because I currently have a 1X anyway, so I already have that 4K 3060 thing on my home theater setup as is. So I think adding a PlayStation 5 would make the most sense, like without the appeal of launch exclusives or some reason that I need that console to upgrade, at which point I would just transfer everything to my Series X and I would be like, great, and sell that 1X off or give it to a sibling or whatever. So yeah, I think I would go with PlayStation 5 regardless. At the moment, however, I'm disappointed by its features and specs as tested thus far. I think the main appeal of the controller being something a little bit different is probably the most exciting thing about this launch. The adaptive triggers.
And that's probably not a great point to differentiate between the two consoles anyway, because it relies on developers in the future actually putting in a whole lot of effort to code these tools into their games and to do so in a meaningful way. We've seen so many times of these, you know, Nintendo are a classic for it, right? Random innovations and things like the Kinect previously in the Xbox world have just kind of failed because people haven't really developed for them and they're not as good as they are. Having said that, for our controller, it's a little better. And if you don't exactly do it, it's not like the controller is useless at this point. But all the raving it's getting based on that platformer isn't necessarily going to equate into great gaming experiences in the future. So it's not a particularly strong point of difference, I would say, Steve.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about this, that so I have the Xbox Elite Series 2 controller, which is an awesome version of the Xbox controller. It's so comfortable, and I think the Xbox Series X and S controllers are kind of based on it, really, and they're a little bit slightly dumbed down in some of the features of it. But it's kind of like the advanced or the pro version of a controller if you were to get one. It's a $250 controller. It's awesome. And it has like rumble, like trigger rumble, like placement rumble all across it already. Now, I don't think it's probably as accurate in the haptic feedback sense as this new PS5 controller, but I don't think they're going to be that worlds apart in terms of the rumble. You know, some people say that it's, you know, there's lots of stories out there of, you know, how amazing Astro's Playroom makes it feel. But I think very quickly that it just won't carry on through the generation the way that it's people are making out like it's going to, in my opinion. I'm happy to be wrong. But yeah.
I reckon what'll happen is that there'll be one or two games that sell particularly well that have one or two moments where it's implemented really well. And the example I would think of from previous generations would be Metal Gear Solid. And you get to, I can't remember who it is, but he says, put your controller down. And then it rumbles. And then he's like, I'm going to move your controller. And then it rumbles and moves on the thing.
Mantis in Metal Gear Solid 2 or something like that? Something like that.
And everyone, you're like, ah, right? And everyone's like, oh, that's so cool. And it's a complete gimmick, right? That and then they read your memory card and say other games that you've been playing.
Someone made the point this week that, like, why would you want to have, like, pressure against your triggers that's, like, dictated by what's happening on screen? Like, over a course of a long gaming session or, you know, over a period of time of constantly having, like, to pull harder with your trigger fingers.
To be fair, that is the basis of force feedback on a force feedback steering wheel, right? Like at the right times, you get more resistance or you actually get the thing kicking back against you and you need to apply more force and you can feel it. You can judge exactly, you know, the tension you need. So it can certainly be appropriate as a force feedback mechanism. I think fishing might be cool.
Yeah. I can see good uses so, for it. Yeah. Like, I just wonder if it's like something where you're just going to be, oh, for fuck's sake, like I'm just trying to pull the trigger.
You'd be able to turn it off.
Your fingers get sore.
And what I think about with this conversation of a rumble triggers on the Xbox One, which I don't think gets a lot of attention or discussion, but in a driving game, those rumble triggers are fantastic. They become so intuitive, and people even forget that the rumbles are on the triggers, not in the controller itself. Like it's got rumble
as well.
Motors in the controller, but it's got specific ones on the triggers, so you can tell if you're spinning on the throttle or if you're locking up on the brakes, and it just becomes so intuitive you sort of forget. So I think the best possible implementation of these new triggers could be such that you forget that it's there. It just becomes part of the experience. But again, it probably won't be something that people are talking about and, you know, oh, this is so amazing. But probably what will happen is people will notice it when it's gone, when they switch back to an implementation that doesn't have these triggers. Suddenly it's like, oh, I'm missing that vital bit of feedback in this specific game or something like that.
So the
So when you go around to your mate's house and you get the second controller, yes, and you pick up the Mad Cats, and yeah, you're like, oh,
exactly, you become the second class citizen.
So yeah, this is the other thing, right? Is that none of the the PlayStation 4 controllers, the DualSense 4s, won't play on PlayStation 5 games. They will only play on PlayStation 4 games that you're back compatting.
There's this whole thing that I was reading about where like PlayStation 3 stuff works, but PlayStation 4 stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, so you can use the PS5 controller on the PS3.
Oh yeah, going back,
but you can't use it on the PS4.
It is so. This is the most Sony thing I've ever read. Only Sony are capable of doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, like then there's the camera. Like, so the PSVR doesn't work unless you have the PS5 camera or the PS4 camera with an adapter, which they're now giving away free, but you have to order from them. So like just weird things like that, like just look weird incompatibilities. You know, there was the auto low latency mode doesn't work on it. The no VRR. So if you're, you know, we saw the Digital Foundry video where locked 60 for almost all back compat titles, which is great, right? That's what you want. But no VRR at all means that anytime that you're dropping below 60, or if you're on a 120 display and a game supports it, I suppose, dropping anywhere down to 45, you're not getting any kind of G-syncy, FreeSyncy thing going on there at all. You're going to get your tearing or your stutteriness. So that just seems like a big oversight. I mean, I know most people, I don't know, maybe they're just going to aim to always have locked targets with this generation or something. But the swapping of the controllers, like not being able to use your old controllers, is just seems weird to me. Like as a second controller or a spare controller or whatever.
Without a doubt.
Missed opportunities.
This comes back to Dave's point about, you know, this stuff should be plug and play. Mm. And it may not be, and that'll frustrate people.
Yes, well, you know, but in the world of PC gaming, 20 years ago today was the launch of Counter-Strike. Actually, it wasn't today. It was this week sometime.
And it's not the launch of Counter-Strike. It's the launch of retail 1. Counter-Strike.
0. I was about to say, Counter-Strike for me was 99, yes.
And again, it's still the best shooter out there. Don't at
him. No, actually do at him. Yeah.
So it began circulating in beta form in June 99 and officially released on 9th of November 2000. So that's 20
November
years ago.
2000. Is that a 1.0 or is that?
That was 1.0.
That was 1.0, mm. Yeah.
When it actually hit retail shelves, because I remember how odd it felt to me that Counter-Strike was on shelves as something you could buy.
Well, I mean, remember it was even part of the Half-Life Orange box.
Yeah.
Where you got both the expansions,
yeah, that came
and
later.
A CD version, yeah, of Counter-Strike.
Was the first retail version 1.6?
The first full release of the mod was published on 9th of November, wow, 2000. And the game was released. It was also available at retailers in North America shortly thereafter on November the 14th.
Wow. That
so
blows me
away. I think the effective release date was the 9th, but yeah.
Then it had a very short, a relatively short gestation period, if you ask me.
Yeah, I mean, this is the game that blew up beyond. I mean, this is the first mod, really, that just went astronomical.
It's so quick.
Who would have thought that putting an economy system into a game would send it so nuts?
It didn't have it to begin with, though, right? Like, there was no. I don't remember any economy while I was active. I really don't remember any economy.
You're talking about purchasing weapons in between, yep, rounds.
Yep. Oh no 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 no. Oh no no. I'm talking about the market with the skins and all of that. That's what I mean. See.
Oh, that was much later.
Oh no 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 no. No, okay, we're not talking about that. Yeah, skins didn't come until Go.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there was modding skins in the early days. You could do that.
You can make all the opponents with very, very flashy skins with high vis, so you could see them a lot easier, right?
Yeah, but they quickly clamped down on that due to unfairness.
But anyway, so, 20 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a bit sad, you know, that Source Deathmatch and Ricochet didn't get as high as that, but anyway.
Yeah, look, Ricochet is really very underrated. I mean, no, I can't keep going.
No, not take the shine off CS at all.
The game was terrible. No, that game was terrible.
It was free. It was free, right? Everyone likes Tron and discs, and no one likes CS. And you know, it is amazing to think it is still going this day. And if we look at the Steam, you know, user base now, they're still playing CS.
And I'd say that we will be still playing it in 10 years from now in some form. Like, it doesn't seem like the type of game that will ever stop.
They're working on Source 2 implementation for CSGO. So I don't know exactly. We don't know what it's going to look like just yet, but they're working on it. So it's not going to go anywhere for another 10 years.
I heard it was a launch title for the PS5.
No, Xbox. Yeah, it just got delayed like infinitely.
No production delays.
Yeah, if we sound sad, listeners, it's because we were all around and probably finished high school by the time this date came around. Maybe not Mike, but definitely the rest of us.
Dave and I graduated a few years after that.
Oh, yeah, Dave's younger as well.
Same year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're the same year.
Yeah, so. Me and George were definitely finished high school by then. That's why we sound sad, because 20 years when you've just experienced 20 years passing feels like a long time.
But a good time.
But a good time. In other good times, Ryzen and Big Navi are kind of hitting the benchmarking scene, and a lot of numbers being thrown around, and performance of the Ryzen CPUs is pretty off the charts, as is the Big Navi specs. And aside from some supply issues, Mike, they're looking like some pretty decent deals.
So the Ryzen chips are basically performing exactly how AMD put in their presentations, you know, within very small margins. So the 5600X is your new gaming king, basically. If you're only going to game, you can grab a 5600X, and it will outperform in a lot of instances the i9-10900K from Intel, which is close to double the price at this point in time. Not in every application, but if you're a 1080p gamer and you're in the esport world, you can get 200 extra FPS in Counter-Strike Go at best.
This is
same in Valorant as well. So, I mean, they're literally 650 FPS in Counter-Strike at 1080p, which is just insane numbers. And then in the high end, the 5950X and the 5900X are ripping shreds in multi-core applications. In most applications, not all. There are still some where Intel are favored, Adobe Premiere being one of them, I think. These chips are pulling less power, and in most instances are doing better than the 10900, and in some instances, a lot better. Mm. And generation on generation, massive improvements, particularly in the 3600 to 5600 lines as well. So really strong chips, and Intel are definitely up against the wall against AMD's current offerings.
Yeah, I mean, remember, these are the X versions, so that's the overclockable ones, right? Whereas there is going to be non-X releases probably within the next few weeks to months.
Has that been confirmed?
Heard rumored that that's coming. But
nothing's been announced officially, but there will definitely be lower SKUs than this. I can't imagine them still just holding on to the 3000 series without making the architectural improvements for the lower end as well. So, yeah, I think your high-performance gamers will be buying a 5600X now. It doesn't seem to be a reason.
I only mentioned that as in case someone's like, oh, I can't afford a 5600X, you know, that's like pretty pricey. It's like there will be some slightly like great performing but slightly cheaper ones coming.
Honestly, you could probably pick up a 3000 series chip on the higher end from people who are upgrading to the 5000 series. You might be able to pick up a 3700X on the fairly cheap, while people go to the 5900s and the 5950s in some instances. So, AMD are really kicking goals with this generation of CPUs, and I think they're going to convert a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm going to go so far as saying that like the 5600-6800 combo is looking like the, you know, medium high end build at the moment. If you were just to throw out a recommendation, would you agree?
I think it's probably a little early. I think we need to see the lower end of NVIDIA and AMD's GPU offerings. So none of the chips that they have currently offered. So 6800 is still reasonably high when it comes to the lines. So if you think the 6800 compares with the 3070, which equates to a 2080 Ti roughly, if we're going to put it in the previous context, just remember that the most, the bulk of GPUs that are bought are sitting around the 1660 mark, which is considerably, and 1660 Ti's or the Supers or 1650 Supers, somewhere around that mark, which are a lot lower in price than the GPUs that we're talking about here. So I think it's probably a little bit early to say that, but on the higher end of performance, I'd certainly agree that that's looking like a really good value for money prospect for gamers.
I mean, certainly Intel, you know, is competitive, but still more expensive, it seems. And at this point, it doesn't really seem like AMD's worth passing over for that, just staying with Team Green.
No, it's certainly Intel need to make a move at this point to make their chips better value. They aren't like terrible processors, right? They are stuck on a higher wattage and therefore inefficient node at 14 nanometers. They're not terrible chips. They still perform pretty well. It's just that you can get a lot better value out of your money for getting an AMD chip at this point in time. And you don't need to go above a 5600X if you're a gamer. It's just everything else is cream on top of the cake. Is that the saying?
Yes.
Cherry on top?
No, I have cream.
Yeah. Okay. Cream
on fried egg on top, right? Because it's so hot, it'll boil the egg for you.
Mm.
Well, no, because the thermal performance is pretty good too. So, and the advantage with the 5600X, actually, thanks, Dave, for reminding me, is you get the cooler with it. And it's a 65-watt TDP. Like, it's 40 watts less than the 5800 and the 5900 and the 5950X. So 65 watts, if you're sitting there and going, well, maybe if I go lower my CPU, because I want to stretch for a nice GPU. Remember that the NVIDIA GPUs are all pretty power hungry, and even the AMD ones are pretty fairly power hungry as well. They're only 30 watts behind or so. Yeah, it's 320 watts, I think, for the 6800 XT versus the 350 watts for the 3080. So pretty hungry GPUs. So if you can save yourself on power, you might need to spend money on a power supply as part of your upgrade.
Yeah, the one thing I will mention, though, is like perhaps we're nearing the end of the generation for that, the AM4 motherboard chipsets.
Yeah, we're at the end of AM4.
Yeah, so, you know, this isn't the be-all and end-all of upgrading. You're just certainly not future-proofing that hard. However, AM5, like, we don't know anything about it. So, like, it could be that you could use these processors in a motherboard down the track. Maybe.
We've got no idea, but AMD have kind of indicated previously that this would be the end of the AM4 and the socket. So I suspect, particularly because the next generation, which is due for or to be released the end of next year, although certainly the back half of next year, it's theoretically going to be the 5-nanometer fabrication as well. So they may want to make some broader changes to it. So I think this will probably be the end of the AM4 socket and will be the best AM4 there is out there.
Like,
in terms of architecture and all that, the most refined.
They'll want to support DDR5 and so on at the end of next year, right? So, but
PCIe 5 as well,
so,
potentially.
You know, in that sense, if you're jumping in now, you don't have to get involved in that early adopting of the high prices of the great new stuff next year. You may as well pick up the more efficient, great value stuff now or in the next year.
Definitely. Yeah. I'd say that this generation is a really good one to buy in, only because I've been converted.
Well, yeah,
they've sold me, right? So now I've got to justify it to everybody else.
I'm watching
else.
You very closely because I'm about to do the same thing, but I'm just a bit lazier when it comes to hunting deals. So I'm just want to see how everything turns out and wait for stock to come back in. Mike's flashing up a RGB RAM stick in front of the camera.
Yeah, I love my bling. The 32 gig I went with in the NCL16, the 3600 megahertz. So.
And George, where are you at with your build?
I think CPU wise, I'm not moving off my X470 motherboard, so that means I'm waiting for BIOS updates, which aren't going to come this year. So CPU wise, I don't think it's going to happen this year. GPU wise, yeah, I'd like to do something sooner. I'm still not happy with replacing my existing GPU with another 8 gig GPU. I sort of like a little bit more VRAM. I'll feel safer. So I'll wait a little bit, I think.
Are you planning on upgrading the monitor as well? Because that VRAM issue may not be that big a deal if you're still running at widescreen 1080 in terms of textures. Like a lot of tests that I saw.
Texture size, yeah.
Widescreen 1080, you can consider to be 1440p.
Yeah, fair enough. But
there's only one game that I've seen in terms of this VRAM issue that has been spoken about that has pushed it. And I think that's Horizon Zero Dawn.
At 4K.
Or maybe a title.
At 4K, sorry? Though.
At 4K is the only one that's potentially pushed over the limits of a 3080.
Still, but consider I've kept this 1070 for 4 years. You know, whatever I buy now, I'm probably not going to be upgrading in a year's time, in 2 years' time, maybe in 3 years' time I might upgrade. So I sort of want to hedge my bets a little bit more, and I don't think 8 gig will cut it in that amount of time.
Well, then, that pushes you over to the AMD side, right?
For now, maybe. Let's see how things pan out.
But you're also in an interesting spot as well, because twitch.tv/raindanceraU, having the fact that you're streaming as well, and some of the features and hardware features of the I live in country Victoria, so people like to ride dirt bikes down.
That was
so I'll start that. Yeah, that was sorry.
I think your RTX was kicking in there, yeah. So we didn't actually hear much of it.
Yeah, I just gave up talking because I knew it was going to come through because it's loud as. Anyway, so twitch.tv/raindanceraU. And in terms of your streaming, you've got NVENC, so NV encoder as well, which is hardware-based acceleration, whereas AMD doesn't have a whole lot in that space. You've also got NVIDIA Broadcast now, which includes the RTX voice. So I would assume that you're leaning towards an NVIDIA because of those solutions. However, the VRAM issue is kind of taking you out because you're sitting there either between 10 or 24 between spending silly money and, quite frankly, absurd money on a GPU and a 3090. So
that's why I'm thinking of all sorts of creative solutions. I mean, in terms of NVENC encoding, you know, my stream PC runs an i5-2500, a second-gen Core i5 with a 1050 Ti. And I use NVENC with a 1050 Ti to do my stream encoding. That's all I need. And it's enough. It does the job. But, of course, I want the RTX voice on my game PC because that's where my mic is plugged in. So if I put an AMD card into the game PC, I can still do the streaming just fine. I can even move my 1070 over to the other machine. But then how do I use RTX voice on my game PC? And I'm even wondering if I should experiment with popping the 1050 Ti into a 1X PCIe slot just to run RTX voice. But then, of course, the amount of power draw increases, so it absolutely necessitates quite a good PSU to handle all of that. I'm a bit confused about how to go from now. I'd prefer just to keep it simple and just to stick with NVIDIA, but I don't know.
Also, to follow up with that as well, so now that you're kind of leaning towards NVIDIA, and I mean, there's been so many rumors going on in terms of TI cards coming with larger VRAM allocations on them, but there's nothing announced yet, so we won't really speculate or add to the speculation in that department. But in terms of your CPU, you're locked into AMD effectively, unless you want to spend a whole lot of money on a motherboard as well, which for an Intel chip seems silly right now. Perhaps Rocket Lake would be good, but I don't think it's worthwhile until they hit 7 nanometer in terms of the Intel space. So what are you thinking for that streaming kind of aspect there. You do have the stream PC as well, but clearly you want some good grunt on your main PC. Are you going to stick with the 5600? Do you think that'll be enough, or are you going to go for a 5900X?
Definitely 5900. I've been looking at the benchmarking of a 5600 versus the higher core count chips, and it really doesn't make sense for me because I mean I run so many applications on the game PC as well as the game. You know, I have Chrome, I have Opera GX, I've got all my overlay stuff. It absolutely makes no sense to go lower core count than what I currently have. So I think it has to be a 5900X for me at the moment.
Yeah, and certainly I would agree in terms of the lineup. The 5800X is really awkwardly placed. You barely get any gains over the 5600X. Exactly. It costs you $150.
You might as well, if you've got the money for the 58, you might as well push
exactly
further. Not a great performance per watt rating.
Yeah. No, definitely not. And Gamers Nexus said this as well. He said that you are only going to buy a 5800X if you really can't stretch your budget to a 5900X for whatever reason, and you just have to compromise. You grab a couple of extra cores, but even then, the fact if you're in that situation, you might as well just take the hit on the CPU and maybe do a little bit of overclocking on the 5600X to try and make up the core difference a little bit in terms of single thread performance.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree, Dave?
Very much so. I'm entirely in agreement with you. I cannot find any fault in your argument.
Oh, excellent. That's great. Yeah, I just thought I wanted to bring you in there for your expertise. And I know you do a lot of research into these sorts of things, so it's good to hear from someone as well informed as you.
I spend a lot of time.
What we're saying makes sense.
I spend a lot of time rendering, far too much time. And I mean, anything that will aid that rendering is a big tick in my book.
Well, Dave's certainly my go-to for hardware-related things when it comes to HOTASs. Isn't that right, Dave?
Well, I mean, yes, you can talk about your lovely new stick.
Yes, I received a delivery last night during Multiplayer Mondays of my Thrustmaster T.16000M, we've decided to call it, the T16000M. Is that 16,000 million? Is that how good it is?
It's just a name. I wouldn't think about it too much.
Oh, but come on, how is the name that bad?
Yeah, it's
like, can't they call it give it some form of cool, funky marketing adjective-y type list?
I think this guy wanted to go for a job. The guy who named it wanted to go for a job naming computer monitors, but he just didn't get there.
It's worse than that because it like the T16000 bit is the joystick, right? But it can also come bundled with the throttle, which is what myself and Steve's got. But you could also get it bundled with the throttle and the rudders, and then it's got another name, but it's all under the T16000. You got the one with rudder.
Yeah, that's the T16000M flight pack.
Flight pack, because the T16000M HOTAS doesn't have a rudders.
Gotcha.
And you can also buy the T16000M separately, just as a T16000M. So this is the joystick. Poorly. Yep. Named as a product.
Yeah, no, I after looking at what we were both looking at, Georgia, on the Gamesman site and pricing right before Flight Simulator came out, and then very quickly that same day went out of stock.
Yeah.
and not to be seen for months, finally appeared again, and I managed to put an order in and get same day delivery that night.
Wow.
Of my HOTAS setup. So got it set up last night, and Dave took me through some of the setup for and just getting familiar with it all again, because it's been quite some time since I've had a joystick, like a good 15 years more.
And I mean, speaking of good joysticks, this is a very good joystick. It has a plethora of buttons.
It does. 16.
And you were doing so much, in fact, you actually have buttons that are unmapped for Star Wars Squadrons.
I do, yeah. I have, like, none of the base buttons on the joystick are being used, because that's annoying to have to take your hand off the stick.
So for the very same reason, I don't use any of those buttons in MS Flight Sim.
Yep, And then on the throttle, it also has 16 buttons, as well as the Z-axis of the throttle.
Is this why it's called the 16000M?
Maybe. Maybe. Because the 00s might represent the buttons you don't use.
Somebody at this, whoever makes it, somebody hired an engineer to make it. That's what they've done. They've accidentally hired an engineer in the marketing space, and the guy's gone, well, why wouldn't I call it the 16000?
Definitely sounds like an engineer.
16 buttons there.
I mean, you've been making joysticks for 40 years. You're going to run into names eventually, right?
Yeah.
No, you just keep recycling the old
maybe
ones.
It's just a rounding error. It's just supposed to be the T16. Excel.
The decimal place is in the wrong spot.
The remark was, oh, look, it's a T16. Ooh.
The guy rested his wrist on numpad zero as he was going to press enter to submit the name.
It's a clerical
press release. And it's gone in the SKU list and off to the distributors and everything.
It's in the ERP, and the ERP is already communicated with all the distributors. That's a model name. Too late.
Yeah, so it's got so many buttons that I've only just getting my head around where they all are and how to actually use them. It did come in this giant box here with all of the things.
Your box is bigger than mine.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing. It feels very what's the word? Weighty. It feels solid. It feels well made. Sturdy. Once I got my head around the settings, started to feel a bit more, in control of it. At first, I was just, all over the place.
The throttle lever action's a bit sticky sometimes. I try to lube it up or loosen it, but it still eventually gets sticky again. It's not a major thing for me, but for some people it would be annoying, I think.
Yeah, I was expecting it to be...
smooth movement back and forth?
Yeah, I do. Very smooth. I was expecting it to be a little weightier. Then I can understand why you wouldn't want it to be either after playing a number of games with it. Very enjoyable and definitely has altered, especially with the rudder pedals and kind of using that different axis to yaw has very much changed the feeling of being static while playing a game instead of just sitting there with the controller or even just the stick moving it around in your hand.
Pat, can I feed you a segue opportunity? Tell me when you're ready for a segue opportunity.
I'm ready right now.
Okay. The main thing, right? I don't have a rudders, right? And I'm perfectly okay to use the twist axis on the stick in flight sim. But where I'm really jealous of you having the rudder pedals is if we were, to suddenly start playing a helicopter sim, I think I'd be really jealous of that. Imagine if a helicopter sim suddenly were to come out.
And it did, and I played it today.
No way.
Yes. So Comanche, the 90s series of games, if anyone remembers those, and if you were
legendary.
A PC gamer back then, probably did, has been dropped on Games Pass, but it has been out in early access for about a year, I think. But not very well received. It's kind of got a mixed rating on Steam where it's for sale in early access. But on Games Pass, the value proposition there is excellent. So installed at a 38 gig download, though, quite significant.
That's a lot.
4v4 squad Comanche multiplayer. It does have a campaign as well. I've only done the tutorials so far, just trying to get the hang of flying a helicopter around because it's significantly different to... With the Hotas, I've tried Squadrons, Flight Simulator, and then just before the podcast for about an hour, I did the training missions in Elite just to get the setup all ready so I can play with Dave. Those all felt familiar and similar when playing, but Comanche, definitely the momentum of the helicopter. I will say that it doesn't seem extremely accurate in terms of simulation in Comanche. It's definitely moving in a more of an arcade path. But it's a multiplayer title. Maybe that's the right way to go.
Do you feel like some of the negativity in the reception could be because of old school Comanche fans coming
no
to
doubt.
It and going, hang on, this is nothing like what Comanche was before?
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's not the throwback PC simulation-y type of thing that was. It's definitely more of a trying to compete with the, maybe not even the Call of Duty crowd, like not even try and get that, but like somewhere between. You know, it's kind of leaning a little bit that way.
Battlefield,
a little
crowd,
bit Battlefield-y, a little bit. Maybe.
I have a question with the squads things. So you said it was 4 versus
yes.
4. Yeah, are they expanding that at all? Are they looking to implement, say, like a battle royale?
To be honest with you, I don't know anything about it other than that it came out and it dropped and then I played it. So I'm here to try and get everyone else to jump in so we can discover some of this stuff.
100 helicopters sounds like a lot of helicopters on the field at once, to be honest.
Yeah.
Depends how big your field is.
Hang on, there's a game. There was a Steam game a couple of years ago that was all about, like, heaps and heaps of helicopters on the battlefield. I can't remember what it was. But yeah, there was a similar one. It looked like fun, but it was definitely an arcade game.
You've got to remember that these games back in the day, they were aimed at dads. They were dad games.
True.
I mean, there's no getting around it. These weren't fun. These were simulations. And I mean, the Janes and the Comanche series.
Janes. Yes.
A lot of Janes games out there. A lot of Hind and Apache games, and Comanche, of course, Longbow. Being the big daddy, played a lot of them. Yeah, Longbow, yep. These are all simulations, and to have a game which is multiplayer, action-y, dogfight-y, fun, yay, team-based online play is going to be a little bit off-putting to the people who played
exactly.
the originals a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're all playing Star Wars Squadrons anyway, if they were wanting to play something in that vein.
Well, imagine 100 map. You know, we can play the Return of the Jedi, the Battle of Endor, or Yavin, whichever one it is. Endor. Mm. God, I'm an idiot.
I would have to say that going off Dave's point and bringing up yours, Steve, as well, that Squadrons is pretty much a simulator.
It is.
I mean, it's accurate, it's, right?
I mean, as accurate as flying a TIE fighter around. Is
well, it would dispute to me that it's not accurate.
Yeah, well,
no?
Well, excuse me, Mr. Mike ST4R. In the movies, there was no such thing as a wind up cannon, not even piloted by Wedge Antilles on his 2 assaults on the Death Star trenches. I'll have you know.
Well, thank you for your input, but my name's actually M1KEST4R. So
yes, well, I'm actually using a.
I'm just going to distribute you. I'm just going to stop you right there, okay? And look, your point is null and void because you have not pronounced my name correctly.
Well, look, I am using a Unicode based keyboard, so my tile set does not actually show everything correctly, and half of everything is in Japanese characters because I am undergoing a Japanese transformation at the moment. My entire work area and computer are becoming Japanese.
All right, we'll call back in when that's completed, please, Mr. What was your name?
My name is Sexmaster 69.
So, Mr. Mr. 69, if you can call
so
back.
So you'll be picking up the new Xbox then.
Perfectly with
yes,
your title.
I have both on order next to my lolly cushions and my inflatable Pokemon.
All right, we're going to have to stop you there. Thanks for your call.
We're going to get kicked off the Apple iTunes.
We definitely got the explicit tag on this. Please let us know if it's not there. Back to some of the HOTAS stuff. If anyone's got any recommendations for HOTAS games, and even particularly VR HOTAS games outside of Squadrons and upcoming Flight Simulator, I'd be very keen to hear because I do have my VR headset on the way, which apparently has started being delivered this week to some Australians I've seen in the past 24 hours. So that's promising. I may not see mine for a few weeks yet, depending on order queues and all that, but you never know. Just holding out hope.
You can have a very busy schedule there, Steve. Well done.
Yes, well, it's coming up to my birthday, so I'm glad I put these pre-orders in when I did. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. George, you've got a VR headset, and do you know? Oh, you
nope.
don't anymore.
I've got a Google Daydream.
Oh, Daydream, that's right, yes.
So not really.
That's right. Yes. So, yeah, well, you guys can all come over and visit and check it out when it's here.
But definitely, I've got the HOTAS, and there's only one game I play with it, so I would be interested in expanding that repertoire and trying it out in other games.
Yeah, I mean,
you do put down quite impressive times on Dirt 2 for using other games.
I am yet to try that because one of the things the rudder pedals do have is it has the push, the toe push kind of action for the air brakes. Yeah, so I'm wondering if like Assetto will pick up. And I can use that as pedals and a stick for driving.
I've seen people using like driving pedals as rudders, but I haven't bothered to do that myself.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Vice versa. Might be interesting.
This whole conversation is a bit of a sticking point for me because I'm the only one left out. I'm stickless.
Well, you did get a stick, but it failed to work.
It didn't work. I did borrow one, so that was a shame.
Do you still have it, or did you give it back?
No, I just wonder if I couldn't be bothered messing around with it too much.
I just wonder if the recent updates might have helped, because the Squadrons update, the 2.0 update, dropped the other day, Dave.
Yeah, so they fixed all the matchmaking bugs, so you now can go and reset your rank if you were affected by the bug. They gave everyone some in-game currency to spend as a result of that and added in some more consumables to spend your in-game currency loot on.
Yes.
So not consumables, but skins and decals and things.
Very helpful. It has a long list of patch notes, which is, it's kind of like the patch we wanted when it came out, really. Like, this is all the stuff we wanted.
It was really weird because, like, on the launch screen it said, here is a QR code, you can look up the patch notes. And I'm like, no.
Well, it's it's good that they've even put patch notes out, because they were not putting the patch notes out for a little while there. But yes, they've done lots of little fixes, as well as this is kind of like the meaty fix, whereas they just pushed out the insta fixes over the last couple of weeks. And this one's got the control issues sorted. All sorts of different things there. Some dogfight issues, fleet battle stuff, the rank things, the reset rank. They've altered the win-loss ratio of ranked as well. Like, they've altered the paths of the AI for... So they've changed significant amounts of the game experience. They've made easy mode, we talked about, Mike, for... fleet battles, they've made that actually probably easy because they realized it was too hard. So yes, it's a significant update, and if you're waiting to go back, now's the time to go back and check it out. Absolutely. It doesn't seem like that many people have done that yet, though. There hasn't been an uptick at all, so it'd be interesting to see if there is any whatsoever now that it's kind of in a good spot. And
well, I mean, I played a couple of ranked games the other day, and it was incredibly frustrating because I was playing against people who actually knew what they were doing. And they've got, you can change out various components in each of the craft, and there's obviously a good set of components that you can pick, and they'd all pick those, and I was just not having fun at all. It was just disappointing. And again, we tried a queue the other night, Steve, for a co-op game. So without the concept of losing, perhaps even.
Yeah, unranked.
And we couldn't even find a game after 10 minutes.
Yeah, we timed out. I had that same experience this afternoon as well, trying to practice.
That's really disheartening.
Yeah, I did get I did get two games, but there was one full time out and one where I quit after 5 minutes because I was like, went back to practice.
If you ask me, I think this is why, when you have a lobby-based game, maybe it's better to have more people in the one instance than to have more smaller instances, because it just crumbles so quick.
I mean, the only argument against that is that you know at least with a small group, that game can at least start. It does unbalance very quickly, though, is if once someone leaves, but they've changed the penalties for that now, which is good. So you get full score if the team who loses a player, and if you win, you get your full scoring. If you're the loser team, then you if they fought back against you down one, then you lose heavily because of that. And if you lose as the team who's down one, then you are not ranked down because of that person dropping. So it's good. I think that the things will balance itself out as long as there's people playing it. Anyhow.
Is it coming to the PS5, Xbox?
Well, it's on PS4 and Xbox One. So, yeah, I'm not sure if they're doing an update.
Maybe you'll get an uptick.
Yeah, potentially. It is crossplay. So, yeah, that's the thing. I don't know what the full kind of count is, but we know that the Steam count is significantly low. Oh, it's crossplay. Yeah, it's fully crossplay from day one.
What's the Steam count?
2,500 peak. Pretty low.
Okay, so what's concurrent, like average or whatever for the day? So.
Oh god, I mean, it swings up and down with the American audience.
The main problem is that I highly suspect they're compartmentalizing the servers a lot purely because a space-based aerial dogfighting game is so touchy in regards to lag. So like if you go anything over say 100 milliseconds, maybe 150 or something like that, it's just going to be unplayable.
Yeah, you'd be wanted to be sitting. I mean, effectively, you're talking about a shooter, right? So
it's cross-play.
You want to sit 60
it's cross-play and it's struggling to get lobbies going. That's a concern.
Well, they made an update where they were like, because people were complaining about lag things happening. So I think it's peer-to-peer, it must be. So they've slowed the area that you can connect to a game.
Damn.
Somewhat.
So there's no dedicated.
I don't think so. I feel like it's the GTA style. Yeah.
That's bad.
I could be completely wrong on that. I feel like that's what I've absorbed from reading about how it all works.
It feels more and more like just a console game that they've realized they had something and then just try to get everyone to play it.
It's a good effort though for having, launching crossplay and it actually worked. Day one we were playing and there was PlayStation people talking and Xbox people talking with us on PC. So, that's great.
Epic and Steam crossplay.
Yeah, exactly. There's some games I found recently where for example, I think it might be Comanche where you can't play multiplayer with the Steam people with the MS Xbox version. Which just seems really weird.
Interesting.
Why you wouldn't decouple your multiplayer servers from the game clients?
Dirt Rally 2, if people bought it through the Oculus store, they couldn't multiplayer with Steam.
Yeah, that just seems so ridiculous.
But they could play with Mark, though.
I understand their technical, difficulties behind doing that. And maybe it doesn't make the feature list like it does. That just doesn't fit within their budget or planning or whatever. But these days, I just really want it to be the norm. I just want crossplay to be the norm.
I agree.
So,
yeah, it's getting to the point where we should probably have it for bigger titles for sure. Speaking of big titles, Take-Two have bought Codemasters, who have a few big titles such as Dirt 2.
Purchase is, I don't think it's been finalized, but it's in the process and both Take-Two and Codemasters have confirmed that it's happening and they're both interested in making it happen. Now, what they need to do to make it happen, I'm not sure of, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be about a $1 billion deal to grab Codemasters. And yeah, so that'll be really interesting. Take-Two making a move into that space.
Yeah, I'm going to clear some space on my desktop for a new launcher.
See that coming. Good call. Hey, mate,
before you do that, you've just got to make sure that you've freed enough space for the current Epic store first, the Epic launcher. You need
There's space where I've deleted the Battle.net launcher, so I could probably go there.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, you get the Epic one going.
And you got rid of Bethesda.net launcher and the Uplay launcher, right? Or the Origin launcher.
They're all gone too, actually. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. They're all gone.
Yeah, you've got plenty of space. You should go right now.
I'm enjoying the space. There's like a whole icon space separating all my icons now.
Yeah. So George has probably got some space there for a new launcher. So outside of a launcher, what could this mean for Codemasters Games? What do you think will happen in this space? Is this going to improve the product at all? Or are they just going to let Codemasters kind of do their thing given they are so successful?
Well, I look at Take-Two's portfolio and I don't see much overlap between what they currently have and what Codemasters does. And Codemasters, you know, is the larger umbrella studio that has subsidiary studios like Slightly Mad Studios to do Project Cars, for instance. And they've got multiple studios working on multiple projects and multiple products. So I think what I'm hopeful for is that this is a big cash injection to Codemasters and they can revamp. They desperately need a revamp of their multiplayer servers, in particular RaceNet, which is a backbone for almost all of their products. It just continuously has to be pulled down for maintenance or for when new features or new games are being added to RaceNet. The outages go for a week. And it's like 8 hours a day for a week outages. It's awful. It's awful. And it affects all of their games. So I'm hoping that they could use these the funds to work on this stuff. But who knows? I mean,
I can tell you what's going to happen.
Go on.
Microtransactions. That's what's coming.
what's Take-Two's reputation for this kind of thing?
They don't own Rockstar, do they?
They do, right?
Maybe they do. Yeah,
I think they do.
Yes, they do. They own Rockstar and they also own 2K. So yes. 2K Sports, the infamous masters of microtransaction ridden games.
Take-Two have the BioShock series, Borderlands series, Civilization, Grand Theft Auto, Mafia, Max Payne, NBA 2K, Red Dead, WWE, of course, because we all care a lot about that, and the XCOM series, Dave.
Mm. Well, I mean, under the broader banner that's now owned, yeah.
Yes, this is Take-Two's all various, Take-Two Interactive.
So of those, how many of those are plagued with microtransactions?
Civ's a big one, right?
Civ, Grand Theft Auto, NBA 2K, and I assume WWE 2K as well. They're the main ones.
So consider that Codemasters have the license for Formula One, which is an annual franchise, and as of 2023, they will have the license for World Rally Championship. Which will be an annual license because it's currently an annual license. I could imagine microtransactions coming into F1 and WRC.
Not in-game advertising of some description.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that happening. So there's potential there.
Do you have more to say on that?
Done.
We saw EA put forward a patent application for further ways to add in-game advertisements into their titles this week. So, it's a patent. It's not like they are doing this, but it's they're expressing their interest, let's say, in adding more in-game advertising. Given that they've...
A patent is more than expressing an interest, Steve.
It's claiming. It's coming. Claiming, a technology... to do so. So yeah, you look, the UFC was the title that cited that fans were just absolutely found the advertising to be abhorrent, and you know, it just became a non-starter of a game, so much so that they then removed all the advertising from the game. But as we've seen with other companies that remove things then just to add them back slowly. I mean, look at the way 2K just did in-game unskippable advertisements in NBA 2K 19 and then repeated it in in 20, and then repeated it in this year's 21. So, you know, it's like they don't learn the lesson. They just find another way to weasel it in and try and make it the norm. But if the thing I want to say about this is that if microtransactions are under fire like they are the way in the Netherlands, where EA is currently being fined $500,000 a week, which doesn't seem that significant, until they remedy the sale of loot boxes in their games. If that's the broader trend to remove microtransactions, they've got to come up with another way of putting revenue streams together.
They could sell a game for profit. How about that?
I'd go with that. That would be my first choice. But
cut the wages of their developers.
Yeah, crunch.
Oh, that's a good point too. Do that.
Yeah. Unpaid crunch would be my second go-to.
Are we a little surprised that people want to just like put in random ads within the game? Like, how is this not? Like, I'm surprised that we don't have streamed ads already within games in the background and things like that. Like, we're at the point where I feel like the technology should surely enable this, that you have certain assets that you can load in on the frequency. And you think about, like, patches, right? If you keep these file sizes fairly small, minor weekly updates of, say, 100 meg or something like that, less potentially, to then put in, you know, in the background of your sports game, of your NBA game, you've got a big banner behind the back that says twitch.tv/raindanceau, for example.
You can buy that ad space like any surely, other ad space on the web.
Yeah, you could buy that ad space. Right? Like, I'm quite a little surprised that it hasn't happened already.
It has happened. And you think about it, any game that has any sort of requirement for online connectivity, which face it, that's a lot of games these days. Yeah, the majority even, you absolutely would have ad space that you could hire out. Now, PlanetSide 1, I think, I'm not sure when it happened. Maybe it happened in 2004-ish? It would have been around 2004-ish. They actually did this. So talk about immersion breaking. You know, you'd be in your sanctuary and you're this futuristic soldier in the future off in another galaxy. Mm-hmm. And there were Pentium 4 ads that popped up in the sanctuary. but yeah.
Well, I mean, you think about what you could do with, say, Call of Duty, right? Even in like the menus, mm-hmm. you have like an ad for Mountain Dew or Pizza Hut or Domino's or whatever you want to do, right? And it just sits there as one of the menu options, like, order your food from Domino's and you can click it and then it just launches your web browser.
I'm going to let you finish, but like that, this is fine if you're like, and the web is an example of this where we all kind of accept that, well, there's these free things that we can access information. So they're ad supported. We'll just live with that or in many cases install an ad blocker. But like, that's just the monetary, yeah, the revenue stream of that medium. But we're talking about things where you're purchasing an application that has a past and a tradition of the way what you expect it to do, which is to emulate a world or tell a story. Like, you don't have ads in the middle of a movie when you go to the cinema, right? Or you buy a...
Well, you do. They're just hidden there. Don't you remember Independence Day?
Sure. You have product placement and that's, you know...
Product placement is like everywhere, yeah, that's fine. Right?
But like you don't see immersion breaking things... Like in the middle of a movie, you expect it to be like what would be there in the reality they're trying to create, right?
Didn't you see Independence Day? I mean, look at my amazing new shoes. Aren't these new shoes great?
Yeah, and you could argue that. Like, the cans of Coke, the, you know, the turned Pepsis so that they're facing the screen.
The Beats by Dre speakers.
To finish my point is that you're talking about selling like kind of live ads within a space that's just like Rain could buy one or you know what I mean, like, whereas I think that that wouldn't be accepted by the vast majority of people, whereas sponsorship within the game that is kind of supposed to be there, say on the sidelines of the NBA court, where there is sponsors in real life with ads there, and that's what's in the game. So I'm just trying to point out the difference of what those two kind of things are. Yeah. Go, Dave.
Look, if capitalism has done nothing better, it is trying to wring every single cent out of anything until the people finally get annoyed and stop using a product. I mean, you know, what happens to a particular company if people stop buying their games? The marketers will just move on to another job. They don't care. They're not invested in the games. And that's part of the problem to what Mike was saying, right, is that why don't other companies do this? Because then you're turning from a video games development company into then a content distribution house and a marketing center. You need to go and hire people to get to spruik for ads. You need to set a market rate for your ads. You need to have figures for interaction. You need to get all of that stuff together behind you, or you need to go into a partnership with Google to deliver the same. And all of that is extra overhead on top of delivering a game. Now, you'd argue quite a lot of that is there already in the marketing budget and the marketing department. But in terms of actually selling the ads there, that's another thing entirely.
Well, to take it back to what we were just talking about with Take-Two buying Codemasters, why wouldn't a publisher set this kind of, you know, the department up to then implement or liaise with, you know, your studios to put this in as part of that technology and have all the stats and all that taken care of. You've just got to put in the technology.
And have it as part of a single launcher, say.
Yeah, potentially, right? So you can order your Domino's from the launcher and then, you know, you hit in game and you're a little bit thirsty now. Better click on that Mountain Dew or whatever it happens to be. And you know what? It's getting a little bit late. Maybe some Doritos. Just to round off the cliche.
Just clean out the browser entirely and have the browser inside the launcher.
Why even have a launcher? Why not just have ads? Just, like you just turn your computer on or your PlayStation 5 on and you just get assaulted by ads consistently. Yeah,
and I think that's the case with a lot of mobile games, is that you do get assaulted with ads. Like playing Among Us, I'm watching an ad after every game because I haven't paid for it. It's a free download game. It's restricted in its content and it's ad supported. I understand that. And if I chose to purchase it, I would hope that the ads aren't included in the purchased version, right? And this is what we're talking about. We're talking about purchased $60 or $170 games now, US, for these new consoles. And the idea of them being a marketing platform to push things into your eyes.
People are still buying the game, right, Steve?
That's right. And that's the key differentiator of this behavior is that people keep buying the games, they'll keep adding the ads.
The ads.
Yep.
We'll also remember that having the ads in the games doesn't necessarily actually convert into anything for them.
That's
either.
True. Well, it converts into dollars for selling.
Nobody
the
knows
ads.
The click-through statistics of advertisements within games or you think about this, George, like you could probably name a whole bunch of the sponsors of that are listed on the sides of the, you know, start and entry, start and finish points from Dirt 2, right?
Indeed.
Yeah, okay. But would you ever specifically seek out one of those products based on the fact that they appear in Dirt?
Yeah, like I don't buy Mountain Dew because it appears in NBA as a sponsor, like within the game, or Nike or Jordan or whatever. Like I don't like it. Yes, it is branding in the sense of that exists, but it's emulating the real life version of that.
Yes, yeah. You exclusively wear Yeezys, is that what
right.
you're telling
yeah.
me?
Yeezy 2024.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
Interesting ads in games. It's not a direction that's particularly consumer friendly, but it is dollar friendly for the companies.
It is inevitable then.
News this week, Mass Effect is receiving a remaster and a couple of custom pieces of hardware, which is sound pretty sweet actually, which is exciting because it's been quite a while. And this doesn't include Andromeda, by the way. It's just 1, 2, and 3, and there's a bit of a hint at Mass Effect 4 potentially in the future as well in some of the marketing.
I am actually interested in the remaster because I played 1 and 2 on
360.
Or?
Yeah. It was exclusive to 360, 1 was,
and
2 and 3 were not.
One eventually came out on PC.
Eventually.
But yeah, I really enjoyed 1 and 2, 2 in particular, and I never got around to playing 3. And I would much, much prefer I'd like to revisit them, but I'd much prefer a remaster, and I'd want to do it on my own PC. Sure.
Yeah, I've done a playthrough since the original release, like as in my original playthrough session time, which might have included one or two runs back then. I've done it since another run, and then I started a third run just recently with when I was messing with my 3D projector, I think about a year ago, and running it with 3D software and trying to get the 3D all working and, nice. And play it that way, which was pretty cool. But even with the Nexus mods, texture packs and all that kind of stuff to try and bring it up resed, it would be very nice to have a linear arts style, at least presentation across all three in terms of the settings and quality of the assets and things like that. It would be nice. So that's to look forward to. I think we're talking about spring 2021 US, so that's middle of next year.
It seems odd to launch it without any sort of other tie-in of a new game, so I imagine it might come out with around the announcement or at least the release of a new game.
Another new remaster, which I only saw today and got excited about, was a remaster of Sam & Max Save the World, the freelance police of point-and-click fame. Will be landing on December the 3rd, so not too far away. I think they're only selling it for about, so was it $28.95 here in Australia. Okay. So owners of Sam & Max Season 1 save an additional 50% as well. So that was the kind of what, I can't remember what year the season came out. I didn't really play much of those. Did you play those, Dave?
No, I think I kind of got a bit overwhelmed with all the Telltale things that were mostly rubbish.
Yes, yes.
Question before we move on. Why does Sam & Max get a season?
I think it's just that episodic style of gameplay that was popular, like Dave said, with the Telltale.
Okay. So it's not really a season.
It's an episodic adventure, essentially.
Okay, all right. That makes it a little better in my mind.
Sam & Max are it's a classic sitcom-y style humor, you might say, quirky oddball humor. So we'll see how that plays out, but the assets look fantastic, at least. Now back to money and video games. Square Enix reports a $48 million loss following the release of Marvel's Avengers, which we skipped over covering on the podcast a couple of times, actually. I was going to bring it up due to the amount of negative press it was receiving. That's not a great release for such a high-profile attempt at a game and license.
It looks like it was just an all-round mess.
It's literally like a copy of Destiny with the Marvel Avengers like license, like in terms of the gameplay elements, and then you've kind of got the fighting, which looks really cool. The actual like battling that you do,
but the camera angles, artistic style, the none of the faces of these Avengers, you know, look like how we picture. These characters, they don't have to look like the actors, because I mean the comics can sort of look a little bit different, but sure. just the way they made them all appear was it was difficult for me to look at these characters the way they looked and accept them as being Avengers. And I've played Avengers games in the past. You know, there was the X-Men Legends clone Marvel Avengers back in the 360 era, which I enjoyed. There's been the Capcom versus Marvel series. You know, these characters are not unfamiliar in different guises, but just the way they look in this game is it's off-putting. It is really off-putting.
Well, they've spent $170 million approximately, upwards of, on the development of the game for reportedly a 60% of the expected total return. So failed pretty damn hard there. that's really sad to see. It seemed like, and if you watch the Skill Up review, he very much pans the design direction and gameplay direction of the title. So hopefully you didn't get caught up in the hype for that, but it's like Anthem, like the way Anthem tried to clone Destiny as well, but like wouldn't talk about being a clone of Destiny. This has no shame in terms of it, like all of the vendors even look the same, the way you get quests from them is the same, like everything about it is the same as Destiny. It just isn't Destiny, and it's in a Marvel game where you just don't need any of that stuff. It's, you know, you're supposed to be like a hero character. You don't need to be like leveled up with skills and more, slightly more light level and power as you go up in your hero-ness. It just doesn't really match. But anyway, that's not great news for the company. But I mean, I read about Sega kind of downsizing, asking people to resign, essentially, because they need to downsize. We talked about them getting out of the arcade business recently. And yeah, it's just...
170 million on development. Yeah, it's
significant.
Well, I'm looking at... Dave brought this up in the Discord as well, as the game developer minimum wages, and this isn't within Australia, so this is partially done just to trigger Dave straight up. But $76,000 for a lead role, and they've spent $170 million. Why? Where is this money going?
Licensing. It's a Marvel game. It all goes to licensing.
Yeah, but like.
They paid for a license on it for a name that sells. They know the name sells. The problem is it just doesn't. Well,
it didn't. No.
It's not a problem. It's a problem in demand.
It was a demand problem.
It's a demand problem.
There's a very clear demand problem
here.
I remember when we were getting the early concept artwork, the teasers, right? And it was all rendered with a really realistic aesthetic to it. It looked awesome, but then when we actually saw the gameplay, it was, what were they doing?
Like, I think the biggest thing that probably killed this game was that there was a matchmaking issue, and I'm not sure if it's been sorted out yet, and it's supposed to be a, like, up to 4-player co-op online experience. Yeah. Like, you join with other randoms that are playing the other heroes to do these battles, and if you didn't, and because the matchmaking wasn't working, then you couldn't actually beat some of these bosses. You couldn't get through the game single player, even though they said that you could, but it seemed to prove impossible to actually do so without, like, you know, fully gaming it and just grinding to try and like exploit the systems to get through, and even so sometimes you couldn't. So it was just a farce, a bit of a bad, I don't know. I want to see a Jason Schreier article breaking down the behind the scenes of this one, because sounds like a mess. New Battlefield in 2021 has been hinted at, so maybe we could get excited for that. They came out and said that they were going to give the studio an extra full year to develop the game and make something special.
But what are they going to do, though? Battlefield Ball War?
I heard that they were going to make this one massively multiplayer. That's the rumor I heard about this.
What numbers are we talking?
They didn't read numbers, but I read massive.
So we're talking, you know, like thousands.
Well, if it's going to scale up to sort of Planet Side 2 numbers, then yeah, you'd need a 2,000. So.
Wow, that would be cool. Like, that's an actual like innovation if you can get a shooter going, because now 100 players in a server is fairly standard. If you think,
well, you can get Fortnite, you can get PUBG, 1,000 plus sort of in stuff. An ATS server, right, George?
It was 4,500.
Okay, possible. So now that the technology exists in terms of getting, you know, several hundred, we'll say at least, so getting the prospect of having a 512 or 500 versus 500 type war going on a large map is pretty cool, okay. Actually.
Mm. EA says, yeah. Okay, so they're saying it's a never before seen scale is what they've said.
Yeah, rumored to be a modern day, yeah.
Well, they say 128 plus, so whether or not it's thousands, yeah.
Okay.
It's 139 then.
But they can't claim massive scale if they can't get into the thousands. And never before seen if they can't get into the thousands.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what else are they going to do in terms of innovation if they're going bigger? And this is the thing, that Battlefield was always the big shooter, you know, in terms of multiplayer. Yeah, 32, 60, 64 players in a server was always a big thing back in the day. But if they don't do something big in scale, like you're kind of saying, then what innovation are they really going to bring? Because the last few Battlefields have all been the same gameplay.
Mm. And 64-player servers.
64 players, you do the conquest, you drain your tickets. Yeah,
Squad's had 100 in it for, what, a year or two now? You know, it's not like there are other games out there that are doing higher player counts that are also shooters.
Yeah, but to attract people to a new Battlefield title, you're going to need to amp this up a little bit. Otherwise, you're pulling an NBA 2K21, right? It's the same game, but it's just a new skin on it, which is what a few of the Battlefield games have felt like for a little while now. Sure, there've been some improvements and some small innovations, but they haven't been particularly good or interesting, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, if it's a BF3/4 sequel, I'll be interested. I don't want modern, as in I don't want future rather warfare. I think that we need a break from historical wars that are nothing like the historical wars, a la Battlefield 1, and especially 5, until maybe perhaps the very later DLC. But yeah, this is a long way away, which is a good thing because I think we need some distance from the Battlefield titles. And
so Battlefield Crusades, you're saying, get some really realistic swordplay game.
Yeah, I'd like that. I mean, you know, when was the last time
we could do like the American Civil War or something?
We should do
like that.
Election 2020. I think that's what they should do. Just go around battleground states.
And rather than, like, you don't get to choose your side, you get to fill in it like a poll beforehand to see how you lead.
What was that Civil War game that they had a few years back? Does anyone remember that? It was like
Was it a realistic shooting
one? Yeah, but you're running around neighborhoods of America.
Is it called Real Life? I don't know.
It's called Fox News.
You're like thinking of like
Homeland? Yeah, Homefront or something like that.
Homeland's
the TV show.
Hey, Homefront 1 was pretty good.
Right. So I think you just convert that into the 2020 US election. And I think that'd be great marketing. You could put ads everywhere in there.
But if you're an imaginary Russian who the Democrats have in their minds, how do you kill them because they don't even exist?
Oh, no, come on. You could do like a StarCraft thing there. You could have like the three kind of, you know, warring kind of factions as well. You have the left, the right, and then you have the foreign influence and it all kind of beat each other in some ways.
Oh, it's even worse.
Because the nationalism beats the foreign influence, but then the foreign influence beats the Republicans. And clearly,
Democrats. Like the commander control in which Battlefield?
Generals.
No, which Battlefield had that? Didn't Battlefield... one
commander
had that?
Mode, Battlefield commander 2. Mode.
Yeah, but like even one was the last one that had 3. It, I think.
Oh, the last one that had, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was BF1, the World War One. They didn't have it in BF5. But you just make it that people can tweet into the election war.
Well, that's even better. Instead of in-game advertising, you have like the billboards and stuff, and it's like tweet instead from the commander. Yeah.
That's it.
No, you have it like Command and Conquer's generals, where each side gets a specific general that gives them certain powers. So you can give AOC the power of not being a Democrat. We have Donald Trump having the power of not being a God-bothering Republican. You know. Is this enough political stuff to get us tagged as political in iTunes yet?
I can put it down as a secondary topic. But
US election analysis.
All right, guys. Well, let's leave it there for this week. That's our coverage.
What a great idea.
It's before we get banned. Thanks for joining us this week on the Eternal Beta Podcast. Hit us up, as always, at Eternal Beta Pod on Twitter, eternalbetapodcast@gmail.com. George, you actually have a podcast now. I listen to it.
Right, thanks. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Well, the Barrel Rollers have a podcast. We're working on that, yeah.
Yeah, I listened to History of the Barrel Rollers Part 2.
All right, cheers. Nice, thank you.
I think on YouTube. Yes. Is that where it is?
Yeah. Yes, I put it on my YouTube, but I also have done the Spotify, the iTunes. Just today, I think it finally pushed through on Google Podcasts.
Nice. What's it titled?
The Barrel Rollers Podcast. Just
Barrel Rollers Podcast.
Yeah.
Sweet. And thanks for coming on to the Eternal Beta Podcast again, George, Mike, and Dave.
Thank you for having me. Been a pleasure.
And join us for Multiplayer Mondays in the Discord server. We'll be playing a lot of games over the next few months.
Thank you to Mike for coming on as well, too. Mike Starr.
No, it's all right. You don't need to take it.
M1KEST4R, correct? Yes?
Yeah, M1KEST4R, that's correct. Thanks, TV Dave. Yeah, that's little disappointing, our previous call-in listener. Our first call-in
points
listener
in the pronunciation
didn't get my name correct. Yeah, that's excellent. Anyway, it's been great.
All cheers. Right, see you guys next week.
Do you know what's actually awkward that you've slid to 7 o'clock? Is I always miss the start of the stream now, and then I never get the reminder because I'm jumping in the shower just before 7.
Take me into the shower and take that out of context. Clip that, take that out of context. That's what happens.